Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. Last week, the United States Supreme Court considered the case, the United States versus Scrimeti. In March of 2023, the state of Tennessee passed a law prohibiting puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and gender-changing surgery upon minors. And now the case has gone to the Supreme Court. This case will decide if there is a constitutional right for children to have sex changes, or if these sex changes can be denied by the state on the basis of medical, psychological, and social harm. And this case will also result in an indirect ruling on men and women's sports and men and women's bathrooms. So immediately after the state of Tennessee passed this law, the Democrats and the Biden administration took the state of Tennessee to court to try to overthrow this new law because the political leadership in the Democrat Party fully believes that gender should be fluid, that children should be able to change their gender if they so desire. The Democrat Party is all about sexual moral freedom, as if that's what American freedom is all about. Now, in this whole court case, there's one truth to always keep in mind. No one can change their gender. It is biologically impossible for one to change his or her gender. Every cell in a person's body is either male XX or female XY in regard to chromosomes. But what's happening is that people are merely changing their outward appearance to look like the opposite gender, even making physical body modifications, which results in not only sexual castration, but serious medical complications because the female body is not made to take in testosterone and the male body is not made to take in estrogen. The whole sex change procedure is a fantasy, pushed by those who despise authority, by those who despise being told what they must be, even by nature. They want to play God. So to begin with, we should start with some biblical teaching in this regard. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 5. A woman shall not wear man's clothing, nor shall a man put on woman's clothing. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. Now, immediately, we think of this verse in terms of cross-dressing, transvestites, drag queens. But it certainly applies to gender-altering hormone therapy and surgery, because that is still the same error as cross-dressing, changing your outward appearance to the opposite gender, but of course in a more extreme way. Now, the text says that this is an abomination to God, which means something that God abhors. Now, since God abhors all sins could be called abominations. But there are certain sins mentioned in the Bible that God particularly abhors, and they're called abominations because they're sins that defy God's authority in arrogance. And it's a blatant defiance of God's obvious laws, such as the sin of witchcraft, which is also called an abomination in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 12. Worshipping idols, graven images. Deuteronomy 27, verse 15, that's an abomination to God. Homosexuality is an abomination, Leviticus 18, 22. Bestiality and incest, Leviticus 18, 23 through 26. And cross-dressing, or rather the application, is to any form of gender alteration. And these sins are particular abominations to God because they seek to overthrow the natural, obvious order God has set up in the universe, which takes a higher degree of rebellion against God, a greater belief in one's own authority, a greater challenge to God's authority. It's Satan's own philosophy in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 14, I will make myself like the Most High. Or Isaiah 65, 5, you think you're holier than thou. Or Isaiah 47, 10, you felt secure in your wickedness, and said, "No one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge have deluded you. For you have said in your heart, 'I am, and there is no one besides me.'" In other words, there's no God. And when people decide not to believe in God, they become deluded in their wisdom and their knowledge. And the basis behind the biblical prohibition against gender alteration is that God is the one who establishes a person's gender. As Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19, verse 4, "Have you not read that he that created them from the beginning made them male and female?" Then Jesus went on to say that what God has established, let no man unestablish, both in regards to the institution of marriage and gender. But it's this submission to God that the ungodly despise. And the current gender rebellion in our day is the pinnacle of mankind's rebellion against God. Now, transgenderism is built on a whole history of human liberation that has been centuries in the making, but it's now coming to full fruition. Gender is one law of God that people can't change and they have to submit to, but now people are shaking their fist at God, even in regard to their gender, because they don't believe God has the right to tell them what to do in anything. Now, parents who have children who are questioning their gender dysphoria, as it's now called, should be sitting down with their children and telling them that God has made them either a biological boy or a biological girl, and it's their calling from God to live in accord with the gender God has given to them. And in this, they'll find God's best. But ungodly parents are misleading their children by telling them they have a choice, that they have an authority in many matters that only belong to God. Last week, I watched an interview with Dr. Leonard Sachs and his book, The Collapsing of Parenting. He begins his lecture by sharing a personal story. A mother comes into his office with a daughter who is experiencing a sore throat. Dr. Sachs asks the girl to open her mouth, but she refuses. He turns to the mother and says, "You know, I need a little help here." And the mother says back to him, "Her body, her choice." So the same ideology of human autonomy in regard to abortion can't help but infect other areas of life. The foundation for virtue today is not God, but human freedom. Freedom to make one's own choices about everything. And that's satanic, where the ideology is that for people to be good, for children to be good and righteous, they must have complete autonomy from any outside authority. Dr. Sachs also shared the story of a young mother expecting who announced to her friends that her baby is a boy. And she was immediately corrected by a leftist who said, "Well, don't you think the child should decide that?" Well, this is their ideology. The transgender writer for the New York Times, Jennifer Boylan, actually wrote an article telling parents, "Set your child free to discover for themselves their own right and wrong." And there's a name for that kind of parenting. It's called gentle parenting. It's actually should be called neglect and child abuse. And there's also a phenomenon among young people today called normophobia. To be normal is no longer considered cool, because virtue and heroism is all about breaking moral boundaries. And this is the new ethic being taught in our society. And when a people abandon God's truth and outlaw it from public education, these are the errors that will always fill the vacuum. Now, what's actually going on in the minds of these trans-supporting parents, these sociologists, these psychologists, is that they despise authority. As feminists, as humanists, they hate biblical moral standards. And so they want to be free from God's law. And so they also want their children to be free morally. And this is where we get parents who are actually encouraging their children to choose their own gender. And they applaud them if they decide to switch genders. Because these parents have a secret subconscious delight in rebellion. They see moral law as oppression. And as our nation departs more and more from God, and more people reject God and the law of nature and nature's God, as the numbers build, they find consensus together and with social leaders and with the legal community. And they begin to change the law, work to lower the age of sexual consent, legalizing drugs, prostitution, homosexuality, transgenderism, and sex changes for children. Hence the court case, United States versus Scrimeti. But here's my point. This Supreme Court, this case, United States versus Scrimeti, is really all about gender rebellion against God. Now, last week, many political pundits addressed the legal issues behind the case, but they totally ignored the moral question, the law of God question. Now, the Supreme Court justices are not addressing the spiritual religious basis behind gender or transgenderism. They're making believe it doesn't exist in order to give the appearance of separation of church and state. But the point I want us to see is that this case is all about religion. This case cannot be decided apart from a metaphysical religious worldview. All of the legal arguments are a mere facade. For the plaintiffs, the arguments are defense mechanisms, a game that's being played to justify or rationalize rebellion against God. Because they all know that this is a battle against God. Very few would admit it, but they all know it. Romans chapter 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God has made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so they are without excuse. And let's not be fooled by these libertarian arguments that the Tennessee law is a violation of the Constitution's 14th Amendment of equal protection under law, that preventing children from changing their gender is sex discrimination, and that people should have the right to do what they want to do because America believes in religious pluralism. Well, nations can hide from God's law, the law of nature, nature's God, by claiming democracy, pluralism, equality, but God is not fooled. God will not be mocked. Nations are actually accountable to enforce God's natural law. Well, back to the case. Upon Tennessee passing this law against doctors and parents attempting to medically change a child's gender, the Biden Department of Justice immediately sought an injunction to stop the law from going into effect. And the U.S. District Court for Tennessee agreed with Biden's Department of Justice and issued an injunction. Tennessee appealed that ruling to the Sixth Circuit Court, which ruled in favor of Tennessee and overturned the injunction, ruling that the Tennessee state government was likely to succeed upon their appeal and that the right of parents to control the medical care of children is not an absolute fundamental right because that's not deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition. So the Biden administration appealed to the Supreme Court. And again, notice how the Democrats are dedicated to and adamant in their support for this new ideology of transgenderism. So much so that they'll take a state to court for trying to protect children from castration. Now, the Biden administration could not litigate this case by themselves. They had to have a plaintiff. And they found it in three transgender teens and their families. But the Biden administration is really the one seeking to overturn this law in Tennessee. Hence the name, the United States versus Scrimeti. Jonathan Scrimeti is the Attorney General for the state of Tennessee. The Biden's administration's Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar is advocating for the plaintiffs against Tennessee. And the ACLU has sent their own attorney to argue against the Tennessee law. A transgender, a woman who's attempting to transition into being a man, Chase Strangio. And this is supposed to show how reasonable or normal transgenderism is. But Strangio is the perfect example of a twisted, diluted nature of transgenderism. Strangio is still a woman. She has a woman's voice. She has a woman's physique. But with testosterone, she's sporting a beard. But she still believes she's a man. So who are these people? These transgender supporters and activists. And that's another truth we always have to bear in mind. Because these are the sodomites, described in Ezekiel 16, who are haughty and have committed abominations before God. These are the Jeremiah chapter 5, verse 26. Wicked people are found among my people. These are the people described in Romans chapter 1, who God has given over to a depraved mind and to the lust of their hearts. These are the haters of the good, described in 2 Timothy chapter 3. The people of the last days, who will be boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. The LGBTQ plus movement is so huge and is such a widespread social phenomenon against God. You would think there would be an entire book in the Bible that would be dedicated to the subject. Well, in fact, there is. It's the book of Jude, which is considered a prophetic book, and which is the second book to the last book in the New Testament. It precedes the book of the Revelation. And these people are described along with the error of their moral reasoning. Jude 4, these are ungodly persons. They live without God in their lives, and hence they turn the grace and the mercy of God into an opportunity for immoral license. Jude 6, they're like the fallen angels who have abandoned their proper abode. Jude 7, they're just like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah who indulged in obscene immoralities and went after unnatural desires. Jude 8, they despise authority. They hate God's standards and they want to live autonomous from God. Jude 10, they revile things they do not understand. Jude 12, they're without a fear of God. Jude 16, these are grumblers, fault finders, following after their own lusts. They speak arrogantly as if they're the authority and they know it all. This is who these people are. And now they're showing up at the Supreme Court, professing to be people of virtue, of fairness, of compassion, of concern. But don't be deceived. These are deviant, rebellious souls who are deceived and who go about deceiving. So there's much to say about this case. But in the brief time I have, I want to leave you with just one point to consider. The irrational arguments of the transgender activists and the reason for them. In any other generation, castrating children would have been morally reprehensible. But the American mind has been so deluded by the lies of humanism and human autonomy So that personal choice and self-will has become such a high value, every other consideration must be ignored. Now, the arguments and the logic has been used by transgenders for years, but now it's on display in the Supreme Court. And when examined, even in the light of only human well-being, the arguments fall apart. Now, the first argument has always been the psychological well-being of the child. And this is why trans activists get away with calling bodily mutilation gender-affirming care. Note also the lie in which the language is being used. They call it gender-affirming surgeries, as if the surgery is simply affirming the gender the person is in actuality. When the surgery is not affirming the person's gender, it's actually changing the person's gender. What is actually being affirmed is what these people want to do in their deviancy. Now, the trope has always been that if these children don't get these medical procedures, changing their gender, they're going to commit suicide. And transgender counselors will tell parents, would you rather have a live son or a dead daughter? Right after the Supreme Court case concluded last week, another young woman came forth suing the doctors who transitioned her to a male at age 12. Kaya Breen of California, and in her testimony, she states that the doctors told her parents the line, would you rather have a live son or a dead daughter? It was emotional blackmail. However, her medical record showed that she had no suicidal thoughts before the surgery. And one of the main doctors she is suing is a well-known trans activist, Dr. Johanna Kennedy, who admitted she deliberately withheld the publication of a $10 million taxpayer-funded study on the effects of puberty blockers on American children, which found that there is no evidence that transitioning gender improves a patient's mental health. Dr. Kennedy told the New York Times that she believed that such a study would be weaponized by critics of transgender care for kids and that the research could one day be used in courts to argue we shouldn't use blockers. So she buried the report. This was her ideology. It wasn't about science. This is her religion. Here's a study that just came out this year from the National Institute of Health that transgenders are 12 times more likely to attempt suicide after sex change operations. So, Supreme Court Justice Alito brought up similar studies to the lawyers for the ACLU. The lawyer then had to admit that the transgender suicide argument is a myth, but then without any proof, the lawyer went on to claim that transitioning would at least reduce suicidal thoughts. Alito also shut down the consensus argument, the claim from government lawyers that the government needs to follow the consensus of doctors who all support gender-affirming surgery. Alito cited the fact that Sweden, Switzerland, and the UK have all pulled back on such procedures. Note also John Hopkins, the hospital that was the leader in the movement, has since stopped gender-affirming surgeries. Another argument that the Supreme Court justices refuted was that the Tennessee law was sex discrimination. For a law to be categorized as sex discrimination, a 14th Amendment equal protection case, the characteristic in question has to be immutable. But in trans ideology, an individual can change between a boy and a girl on any given day. It's a matter of personal choice, not an immutable characteristic like the color of one's skin. And the Tennessee law is not treating people differently, in that some young people are being denied the right to change their sex. This law is a matter of preventing doctors and parents from castrating their children, a life-altering, irreversible decision made before the age of consent that will result in harmful medical consequences. Transgender activists also like to use the forced puberty argument, that the state is forcing children to go through puberty. And what these trans activists are trying to do is reframe what is natural as unnatural. So the natural, God's natural, must be prevented. But actually, what the transgender activists and what the Biden administration want to do is to interrupt the natural progression of children with chemicals that will sterilize them. They're forcing the children to do that which is unnatural. But notice how one's worldview affects how one sees the issue. As C.S. Lewis wrote in his 1950 book, The Pilgrim's Regress, that the humanists of the age try to pretend that milk is the same sort of thing as sweat and dung. Quote, "Are you a liar or only a fool that you see no difference between that which nature casts out as refuse and that which she stores up for food?" Unquote. What Lewis is describing is the failure of liberals and humanists to believe that there is a higher natural law given to us by God, that there are things clean and unclean, that there is a right and a wrong, as opposed to the moral relativism of liberalism. And this belief in natural law on the part of Justice Robert Bork was the reason the Democrats refused to confirm him to the Supreme Court. But fortunately, now, six of the current conservative court justices believe in natural law. Now, they're attempting to make all of their arguments on the basis of social science and medical science, but in reality, what's driving their application of medical social science is their underlying belief in natural law, that the natural state of affairs is for children to be the gender they were born in. That's the right moral ethical position. Now, the three liberal justices, Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, hold to the philosophy of Oliver Wendell Holmes, that God's law is not to be considered, that there's no such thing as natural law. Law is simply a function of what people want to do. And on this foundation, that is why these three justices are opposing the Tennessee law, because they refuse to make any judgments between right or wrong according to the higher law of God. Instead, human choice is the law. Therefore, they believe that the choice of these transgender activists, these doctors, these parents, must prevail. This case will be settled on a worldview ideological basis. The six Republican Supreme Court justices will all vote to uphold the Tennessee law, and the three Democrat justices will all vote to overturn the law in favor of children undergoing sex changes, because the morality of these three justices are all based on human freedom, not the law of nature and nature's God. Now, yes, leftists actually admit that these surgeries, these drugs, will result in sterilization and other bodily harms. But for these ideologues, it's worth it, because young people can do what they want to do and be free from God's moral restrictions. Sotomayor even stated, every medical treatment has a risk. Even taking aspirin comes with a risk. Well, she said that because she's operating on the wrong moral foundation. And hence, she couldn't see the fallacies of her argument, that there's a difference between an aspirin that's intended to help a person to be restored to natural health and gender surgery that's intended to alter and harm a person's natural state. Sotomayor also made the comparison of a girl with unwanted hair to a girl who doesn't want to have breasts. again, failing to make proper moral distinctions. Jackson tried to make the comparison between the Tennessee law and defunct laws against interracial marriage. There's no difference between protecting children from castration and protecting white people from marrying black people. However, there's no comparison. The Tennessee law is protecting children from medical harm. A better comparison is that the Tennessee law is similar to the law in every state that you can't get married until you're, 16 or 18? Why? Because children don't have the wisdom to make such choices. But Jackson doesn't see the analogy correctly. And I contend that this is what happens when the foundation for one's morals are upon yourself and not God. And by the way, Jackson, after her confirmation hearings about 2 years ago, was asked to define a woman, and she refused. She instead said, "I'm not a biologist." And it's evident that she was refusing to answer the question because she was not willing to go along with the traditional definition of womanhood, but to leave the door open for a transgender definition. If she can't define a woman, she has no business being on the Supreme Court. But these are the justices the Democrats want on the court. You know, at the time, Senator Blackburn replied to Jackson, quote, "The fact that you can't give me a straight answer about something as fundamental as what is a woman underscores the danger of the kind of progressive education we're hearing about." So what we're seeing in all this is the teaching of Romans chapter 1. When God is not acknowledged, people are given over to a depraved mind. Romans chapter 1, verse 21, "Even though they knew God, they didn't honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened." Verse 22, "Professing to be wise, they become fools." Verse 8, "And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper." And that's the takeaway. Without God, one falls into moral, spiritual darkness. What we saw last week in the Supreme Court case was just another example of Romans chapter 1 in practice. The whole case, the whole event, is God showcasing for us the truth that his word is good and right for mankind versus the foolishness and blindness of the way of Satan. And that's why we need to flee to God, to embrace his truth and be renewed in the spirit of our minds. Because without committing ourselves to God, we're going to become like blind men groping along the wall. Deuteronomy chapter 28, "And you will grope at noon as a blind man gropes in the darkness. And you will not prosper in your ways, but you shall only be oppressed and robbed continually with none to save you." All because people forsake the word of the Lord. Psalm 119, 130, "The unfolding of your word gives light, it gives understanding to the simple." And Proverbs chapter 28, verse 4, "Those who forsake the law praise the wicked, but those who keep the law strive with them. Evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand all things." Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below. Abide in Christ. Be connected to God. It's our only hope. And may Jesus Christ reign.